I think because Jaipur is still so small, you can almost compare it to, like, I don't know, like New York in the 70s when, like, all the artists were, like, hanging out with each other. Here, because we're all, you know, there's like 40 of us, if I'm being sort of gracious, we're sort of thrown together, and, you know, it's a melting pot of cultures and ages and backgrounds.
Noel Kadar graduated from the Rhode Island School of Design and has lived and worked in India for over a decade. With years of international art and design experience, Kadar was artistic director of the Sculpture Park at Madhavendra Palace, Jaipur from 2018 to 2020. Since the pandemic, Kadar has helped organize large-scale exhibitions, and she also consults for Art Dubai and other art and design institutions. Her focus has always been to facilitate the introduction of Indian contemporary art, craft and design to other parts of the world, while also bringing international standards for contemporary art and programming to India. Hi Noel, welcome to the Design Pataki podcast. Thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to talk to you about Jaipur's unique culture and this entire brimming pot of art and design that is happening all around you over there. And thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to start off with my first question, being the most cliched one, being, what is your relationship with India? How has it been? And as someone who's been so wholly immersed in the arts internationally as well, how has that transition been for you?
Well, you know, the first trip I ever made to India was in 2006, while I was still studying at RISD. So I was 20. And right after graduating college, I immediately started living between India and New York, working for a company called Odegaard. And so really, you know, my entire adult life, I'd say about 80% of that has been here. So while, you know, I did grow up in the U.S., my sort of formative years as an adult person really happened in India, traveling, you know, abroad for art and design and work purposes and seeing my family, of course, but my learning all happened here. And I think that that's a defining character of who I've become. And I think it also has really helped me in my career because, while I'm not Indian, I'm not really an outsider looking in the way that I might appear to be when someone meets me.
Right. And this is more in Delhi, or has this always been in Jaipur?
It started in Banaras and Varanasi.
Oh, wow.
And that was wild. I was working with Jacquard weavers, working on hand looms there. And then it moved, production moved to Rajasthan, and I was based out of Udaipur. So I also think that because I started in Varanasi, like Rajasthan sort of like, it's like a comparative Disneyland compared to Benares. So I think after like my first time ever in India was there, once they, you know, I was moved to Rajasthan, it was sort of like, oh, like I can do this. This is easy, you know? And so I was between Rajasthan and New York for a number of years. And then I moved to Delhi for about 7 or 8 years. I'm losing track of time. And then I think Jaipur's now been about 4.5 years. But I sort of started in Rajasthan. And I've, you know, now I'm settled in Rajasthan because my husband is from Jaipur. So it's a full, for me, it was like coming back home when we left Delhi.
And tell me about your experience as the artistic director of the Sculpture Park at the Madhavendra Palace. How has that been? Because you've curated it, you've created it, it's been your baby. So how has that entire experience been?
Well, it's not my baby. It's a few people's babies. It was, you know, Vasundhara Raj's baby, first of all. You know, she sort of green-lighted the project. And Malvika Singh sort of helped inspire and advised the then Rajasthan government towards promoting culture and art, and, you know, especially contemporary, you know, variations of Indian ideas. And then it was Aparjita Jain and Peter Nagy who founded the Sculpture Park, and then they brought me in to run it. So I can't take credit for it being fully my baby, but I did love it and you know, gave it everything I had. And it was kind of a solution to like a problem. And I feel like art and design, I mean, design maybe a little more than art, but art as well is, you know, everything, it's all problem solving at the end of the day. Like when an artist makes a work, he or she, they're trying to solve a problem, and that problem could be an idea in their head that they're just trying to manifest into a reality or they're working through something. And it's the same with design. And I feel like the Sculpture Park solved this problem that we all talk about, which is, you know, how do we make art more accessible to people in India? You know, when the culture of museums isn't, you know, really accepted, you know, widely, or promoted widely. There are a lot of people in this country that don't feel like those spaces belong to them. And therefore they're not engaging or seeing art. You know, and I'm not just talking about contemporary art, I'm talking about all kinds of art. So by sort of bringing art into a public monument space, you're immediately, you know, putting works into a place where everyone feels comfortable and everyone, you know, is happy to bring their families. So before we knew it, you know, we were just seeing, I don't know, we were getting 6,000 people a day in the winter months sometimes. And it was families, and it was people traveling from different villages or from Bombay or from Delhi, or, you know, or curators from some of the best museums in the world to see some of the works that we had. So it was just a really holistic, beautiful, sort of democratic project.
No, it sounds incredible. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you must have faced a lot of challenges and, you know, logistical issues, locations, any, like, could you share some of those experiences of challenges that you faced along the way?
To make light of a project that was very challenging in ways, monkeys were a really big issue, and like something that like I certainly like didn't learn how to like problem solve in school or like in, you know, the career I had before working with the Sculpture Park. And that, you know, it was big and small things. Like monkeys was a big small thing because they really can ruin artworks.
Wow. Yeah, one wouldn't think of that as an issue. I wasn't expecting, yeah.
I bet you weren't. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either until it became one of the biggest problems, you know, just keeping the monkeys away from the electronics, the wiring, you know, sculptures that had sort of scent as part of the experience. Like that was, you know, really tricky.
So how did you solve that one?
We kind of didn't. They were there before us. You know, we were sort of moved into their turf. So we learned how to keep the windows locked and, you know, didn't bring in more artworks that smelled good, like food, you know, and secured the wiring. I mean, we, you know, it's sort of, we cohabitated.
That's interesting. Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, we were invading into their space. So that makes sense.
I think logistics when dealing with large scale works is a problem no matter what. In an early, you know, a late 19th century palace, it becomes a bigger problem because it's a heritage site. It's a landmark. So obviously we had to be really careful, but you know, that's all sort of part of that's expected. And, you know, working with the government, it has its issues, but at the same time, they let this thing happen. You know, they supported it in their way. And I think that it's easy to complain, but it's also really important to acknowledge that this project happened and, you know, they gave us the space for it and, you know, really let it be.
Got it. And what is your vision for the next Sculpture Park? Like, what can we expect? What are you thinking? What is going to be different next time around?
I don't know. Well, you'll have to stay tuned for that. it's been you know, closed for a while because of the pandemic. And as we explore how to reopen it, because it takes a lot to start something again once you sort of close it for a few years. I know Peter and Aparajita have plans to open it again, and we have some artists confirmed from a few years ago, but the world's changed a lot, and how we think about shows has changed, and how we fundraise has changed. So I really think we don't have the answer to that ourselves.
And you know, Jaipur's got has grown into having a very distinct creative subculture of its own. And how do you think this came about, given the last few years of, you know, the time you've spent in Jaipur, and it's sort of taken a life of its own? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what makes you say that? Like, I know you're interviewing me, but I'm curious to know, in the last few years, like what is it about Jaipur that's captured your attention? Because I have an answer to the question, but I'm just curious.
So in my opinion, there's been a lot more attention drawn, of course, to craft, but in a more contemporized way. So it's always been a more handicraft segment that people have looked at it with. But now I feel like that's changed a lot, especially with a lot more. There was another sculpture park which was supposed to happen pre-pandemic, which our team went to cover. So I feel like there have been a lot of interesting artists also, which have, you know, their work has been coming to us. So I think that's what's really drawn our attention to the space, whether it's jewelry, whether it's fashion, whether it's art and design is, you know, what you're looking at. So I think in that sense, even culturally, in terms of we've got everyone flying down to do shoots over there, it's not purely just a wedding destination as it used to be. Having said that, again, I know this is not about me. Having said that, even I think the crowd that it's drawing is very different from what the crowd that it used to draw 10 years ago. So I think that's probably the subculture that I'm kind of talking about over here.
Yeah, so I think about this a lot, and I wonder sometimes, because I've been coming to Jaipur and living, you know, in Jaipur in some way or another for the last, 17 years now. So it's always been a hub for creativity. It was designed to be a hub for creativity. You know, it's a planned city to be a city that, you know, has various forms of craft. Like that was an intentional thing when the city was founded. And now, or always, I feel like the difference is we used to come to, and when I say we, I mean non-Indian people, used to come to places like Jaipur, make exquisite things and sell them somewhere else. No one was celebrating Jaipur or Rajasthan or India or like the craft or the maker, but it's always been there. I just think that now there's more of an interest in and more of an appetite domestically for the story. And I think that there's more of like a celebration of ownership of the beautiful things that are coming out of this country and not only for export anymore.
Right.
You know, even if you look at like a lot of export brands, you know, they're all like Jaipur rugs, right? Like it's done phenomenally selling here, even though originally, you know, they're selling rugs everywhere else but here. You know, now they have this incredible brand that's collaborating with artists and designers and you know, they're coming out with new things and they're doing phenomenally well in here domestically because there's an appetite for that, and people want the story, and they want things local, and they want things Indian, and it's been a long time coming. I mean, I'm surprised it's taken so long, but I'm so glad it has. So to answer your question, I think like there've always been a lot of really interesting creative people in Jaipur. I mean, ever since I've been here, the people I've heard about before I've come here, you know, you have like Faith Singh and Anoki, you've Bridget and her amazing block prints. like, you know, Mary Helene Vitelek and her incredible jewelry, you know, they've all been doing this forever. But now you have all these young brands and maybe because of like social media and like, I think that the, like the richness of Jaipur and how specifically unique it is has really captured people's not only attention, but like sort of like hearts, not to sound cheesy. Because it's a gem of a city. And because of that, more young people are moving here. More artists are opening their studio. And people, I think, are more confident to take risks, in terms of design, because there's more of an appetite for like, not just like a little spin off the traditional, but like really sort of taking ownership for like, you know, individual design aesthetics.
I completely agree with you. And coming back to Jaipur Rugs and other export houses, I think they've all opened up to the domestic market a lot more and they're collaborating a lot more with Indian designers. So I think in that aspect.
And they've been really successful.
It's been great and it's been a great journey. And social media, of course, has, I think, played a huge part and a role in that as well, because exposure is so much larger than, you know, it would have been otherwise, as opposed to if you were staying in a metropolitan like Bombay or Delhi. Coming to my next question, which is, which are some of your favorite design spots in the city? Any insider haunts, places that you like going to that you'd love to share with people who are visiting Jaipur or listening to this podcast?
We're like this little family. And I think because Jaipur is still so small, that's possible. You can almost compare it to like, I don't know, like New York in the 70s when like all the artists were like hanging out with each other, you know, like Andy Warhol and Keith Haring and like whatever. And like, you know, everyone was sort of just like in each other's spaces. And you know, if you go to New York now, it's just like, it'd be impossible to like meet sort of a famous artist and a famous designer, like, and a famous chef in the same party, you know, but here, because we're all, you know, there's like, I don't know, 40 of us, if I'm being sort of gracious, you know, we're sort of thrown together and, you know, it's a melting pot of cultures and ages and backgrounds. And we're all, really supportive. We buy each other's things, we wear each other's things. So with that said, for clothing, I love Idli by Thierry Journeau. I love Parampara. I've been wearing mostly her clothes to events and shows that I go to now. My friend Noor just opened a store called Ekru, which is like this gorgeous little gem of a Haveli. She does the most amazing sort of home decor and objects. And until recently, she was only exporting to Kuwait, but now she's opened a store in Jaipur and is selling here. I love like having a coffee at Gem Palace for the sort of aesthetic that Marianne, has created for, you know, for them or for like Cafe Palladio. I still think Anoki is like amazing for like pajamas or a bathrobe. You know, some of the classic block prints, like you still always have to go. Neela House, exquisite shop, even a more exquisite Haveli designed by Bijoy Jain. Let's see.
So any designers, artists in and around Rajasthan that you would recommend or that have come to, you know, who you think are outstanding or come on your radar recently?
I'm a little embarrassed to say it, but I really don't get out much outside of Jaipur to the rest of Rajasthan. I'm sure that they're there, but if I'm not here, I'm traveling for work to, you know, like Delhi or Bombay or something. So unfortunately, Jaipur is really the only area that I'm super sure about at the moment. That's something to be worked on. But there are two contemporary artists that I've really enjoyed working with. Prashant Pandey, who's a contemporary artist in Jaipur. He was part of the Sculpture Park, both editions. And then this wonderful artist called Shiloh Suleiman, who's just moved her studio here. And she's just been such a wonderful energy to the city. And I really think that in the next 10 years, we'll continue to see sort of this renaissance of Jaipur, like a revival of the city, in that more and more young artists will move their studios here because they're still affordable and you can make anything here. So it makes a lot of sense for an artist to be here.
Can you talk about Prashant Pandey's work? If I remember correctly, he did a piece with like little drops of blood in it, if I'm not mistaken. Was that the one at...
Yes. That wasn't at the sculpture park. That was part of the Kochi Biennale, like a number of years ago. I know that it was shaped like a diamond. I know the work you're talking about. Yeah, they're droplets of blood sort of smushed between the two, like lab samples. Like, you know, that like petri dish sort of glass samples. But Prashant, he has a really interesting background. He comes from a family of Brahmin stone carvers, and they only carve deities, using like, you know, like the highest quality, like Makrana marble. And so Prashant sort of grew up, you know, around sculptors of, you know, really well-trained figurative sculptors. And at some point just sort of broke from that and started creating his own works, originally using the scraps left over from the sculptures. And that we had this conversation years ago about how this idea that you know, when you have like a Ganesh ji and it chips, you know, you can no longer like have it, use it in your home. I've learned that from my husband, so you can tell me if that's true or not. I believe it is.
It is. Don't worry. It is true. Yeah.
Right? Okay. I don't want to sound like I think Prashant felt at some point, like if these sort of God statues are coming out of the marble, like why are the chips wasted? You know, why are they just being thrown out? So the first sculptures he started making were made from sort of these like discarded God pieces. And he felt like, you know, there must be some energy in that, you know? And so he started making, sculptural objects using these, marble chips. This story moves me every time I talk about it. And I think that, you know, if you like the works visually, that's fine. But like once you hear that, it sort of changes that, you know, your entire perspective of what you're looking at. You know, as his practice has evolved, a lot of what he does is he takes sort of discarded materials and repurposes them to take on sort of different forms or shapes or meanings. So right now he's working on the most exquisite objects that it looks like they're all comprised of tiny pressed flowers. But once you look closely, they're actually like smushed cigarette butts that he's collected off the ground.
Oh, wow.
Which is like kind of foul, but like, you know.
Oh, wow.
He's turned this sort of gross object for, you know, gross because it was in someone's mouth, gross because it's poisonous, gross because, you know, the industry. I mean, there's so many reasons why this sort of cigarette butt is grotesque, but... And then now he's just turned them into like some of the most delicate, like exquisite fairy-like sculptures. And he's done this with various materials, with, you know, scraps of metal or orange peels or whatever. But these are two examples that I can.
Wow! So they actually look
that I'm most excited about. They look like beautiful flowers. I mean, they're so.
Unless you go closely, and then you're like, oh no, it's
even hard to tell. Yeah, it takes you a while. Like sometimes someone has to be like, those are cigarette butts. And then you're like, oh, you know.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting.
They're amazing.
That's so fascinating. They're amazing, yeah. So what do you feel have been some of the best parts about working in Jaipur for you?
I've really enjoyed the camaraderie that I found. I think that that's that's really meant a lot to me, you know, and it's through designers, but even sort of our young Maharaja, like he's really supportive, like he, you know, towards art and design. And I think because he cares so much about the city, you know, he wants all of us that are creating things to really feel welcome here. And so, yeah, just like, you know, from sort of macro to micro, the camaraderie I've felt, being here has really sort of been refreshing, and surprising, but also just it feels like a new frontier in a way. I mean, it's like you rightly said, it does feel like it's the beginning of something. And I think for all of us that are here for that, it's just a really exciting time to be hopefully representatives, of, you know, whatever comes next.
Amazing. That's lovely. Thank you so much for answering all of our million questions today. And thank you for being on our podcast. This has been so insightful. We've loved it. And yeah, thank you, Noel, for being here today.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Nice to speak to you.